Hello, I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome back. As I said, you're listening to The Mark Steiner Show here on 88.9 FM, the voice of the community at Morgan State University here in Baltimore, Maryland, where we're broadcasting from for Free Speech TV. We are here broadcasting this evening for the full hour. You can watch us on TV. You can watch us on the net. Go to steinershow.org and stream us live. We are have a pleasure having the studio with this colleague who comes on here a great deal, always comes up with interesting people and ideas, Cedric Muhammad, who is Senior Organizer and Research Associate for the Program on Inequality and the Common Good at the Institute for Policy Studies. And he's brought with him tonight Chris Rabb. Chris Rabb, who was with us on election night. We were on Busboys and Poets broadcasting. Chris Rabb was in Denver with Free Speech TV. His book is Invisible Capital, How Unseen Forces Shape Entrepreneurial Opportunity. And he's speaking tonight here in this building, the Communications Building, at Morgan State University in room 101.
Yes, sir.
Down the first floor at 7:30. So listen to the show and come right over and join Chris Rabb, which you're going to want to do as soon as you see this conversation unfold some. Chris, welcome. Good to have you with us.
Thank you for having me.
It's good to have you. So this is interesting. I wasn't sure until you sent me a copy of your book over the web. It's amazing what the web can do these days.
This is true.
The entire book landed on my website here. But there's in all poor communities, African-American communities, Latino communities, Native communities, poor white communities, people's dream is to be an entrepreneur, to make it, to have their own business, to grow big. And that's just the light in a lot of young people's eyes. But I think the reality of invisible wealth is the other side of that coin. Talk a bit about this contradiction.
Well, we live in a society that is rife with mythology, and we don't know that these things are myths because we've internalized them. So whether it's Horatio Alger 2.0 in the embodiment of Donald Trump or Robert Kiyosaki of Rich Dad, Poor Dad infamy.
You really don't like those guys at all.
No, I'm not a big fan.
We'll talk about that.
No, I'm sure they love America in their own special way. clearly not as much as I do, but, I'm sure they have souls. I'm sure their mothers love them. And I'll give them that.
Okay.
Other than that, they're vile. And I can say that because someone has to say that consistently and unapologetically because they are weaving deception among people who are desperate. They want you to believe that all you need is to work really hard, to have a great idea, and to have a good attitude. And with that positivity, that's all you need to achieve your dreams in this country. And the reality is that's simply not true. As someone who descends from enslaved Africans, very few people have worked harder than the enslaved in this country. Very few. It's not a good business model to import lazy people, right? So from that perspective, how do they do?
You don't want to buy a lazy slave.
No, right? it's not a good business proposition.
Right.
Right? So from that perspective, there are millions of folks who worked really hard, who had faith, who were creative in many ways, who never achieved material success. And I took the time to synthesize all of these very boring government and foundation reports about entrepreneurship in America over the decades, and there is no direct correlation between positivity and success in business or a ridiculous work ethic or putting them all together. And the reality is what I found was it was invisible capital.
What does that mean?
Well, let's just break it down into three very kind of bite-sized components. Human capital, social capital, and cultural capital. Human capital being your skills, your training, your education, your credentials. That's human capital. That makes sense. What people often don't understand, though, is that you may know how to bake cookies, but you don't know anything about accounting, about bookkeeping, about marketing, about operations. So you start a bakery without any of that, those other very important skills that you need in a business. Social capital is your connections, your networks, who you know, but more importantly, who knows you and what they think about you. So when I tell people that I'm a native Chicagoan, they say, oh, do you know Barack Obama? And I say, yeah, actually I do. But that's not nearly as impressive as if he knew me. If you ask President Obama, you know Chris Rabb? He's like, I have no idea who the guy is. Right? That's far more impressive and useful to me if I can say, the president, calls me up and asks me about entrepreneurial policy. That's not happening quite yet. The third thing is cultural capital, which is how you work a room, essentially. How do you navigate in different social settings or professional settings? how you comport yourself, how you dress, how you talk, what knowledge base do you access to communicate with somebody else to get what you want, whether it's a bank loan or you're at a nightclub or wherever. How do you comport yourself? And those three things are largely what constitute invisible capital, plus those things that you have no control over, the body you were born into, the family you were born into, the community you were born into. So there are not a lot of the major barriers that exist that used to exist before the civil rights movement, but they're still around. The vestiges are still very real, as you well know.
Now, you said a couple things here I really want to explore a little bit. I mean, one of them is that you said it's more than just about positivity. Now, this is important because I think that there's so much in the tenor of the preaching of the moment that if you have a positive attitude, that if you just do what's right, that if you think you're going to make it, you're going to make it.
Right, right.
It's got almost a quality of the church to it in some ways in terms of that reinforcement of you can make it, you can make $1 million, you can out there and be one of them. What you're saying is, you're not saying don't be positive.
No, I recommend it. It doesn't work for me, but no, for you it could be great. No, no, I tried optimism.
What are you trying to say?
I frown on it, but it's good.
So I think that's important in light of what you also wrote about, which was the reality of the percentages of entrepreneurial firms, small firms that are actually owned by people of color and by women in our society.
Yeah, they don't match up. And it's not because women are less positive than men, or it just doesn't work that way. And it's the single reason I will never be on Oprah Winfrey Show. Because
I know how much time she's going off the air soon. You better.
Somehow I don't think that's going to happen. I think I'm kind of fond of knowledge and literacy and competency. I think those things probably are more correlated with getting your stuff together, right? Than just saying I believe. You can believe. That's great. I mean, I'm pro-faith, but faith alone will not get you there. Will not. And then people say, well, what about, you know, Donald Trump? He's a self-made man. He pulled himself out of Wharton is where he pulled himself out of. He pulled himself out of a rich father who was in real estate. His first job out of college was working for his father. He inherited multiple millions of dollars. When he has a seminar and says, you can be just like me, I want to ask, I can go back in time and be born as a rich white guy? How do you do that? I'm curious. That's what he tells people, and he doesn't talk about his invisible capital. He, I suspect, has a very thin skin. I acknowledge that I was born with privilege. I was born on second base, but I don't swear I hit a double, right? I know that there are certain privileges that come with being a man, being straight, speaking English as a first language, speaking standard English, right? Speaking in different environments.
Coming from a college-educated family.
I'm six generations college-educated. You don't think that has some impact on my ability to navigate different environments?
Right.
Professional parents, traveled. All of these things have helped me, but I don't feel guilty that I have these advantages as long as I employ them for the benefit of my family, my community, people I care about who don't have those opportunities. I could be very arrogant, and a lot of people who have this level of privilege, like Donald Trump, who is far more than I, they're a self-made brand, not a self-made man, and there's a big difference.
Folks, we want you to join us here, wherever you're listening to us from in the country or you're watching us from in the country, 410-319-8888. It's a toll-free call if you have a cell phone. Soon we'll have the toll-free line in here for you to join us. Write to us here, steinershow@gmail.com. It's the question of whether or not hard work gets us where we want to go solely. What's the other part that we're not seeing? I mean, how many people do you know? Maybe you're one of them. I was certainly one of them. How many people do you know who have attempted to start a small business, make it grow, and seen it fall? Because we have a dream in this country to do that. Now, I've run this company here as a small business. And it's a pain every day to make sure we meet payroll, take care of health care, and take care of our employees. So 410-319-8888. We're joined in studio by Charles Rabb. His book, Invisible Capital. Did I say Chris?
Chris Rabb.
That's all right.
Invisible Capital, How Unseen Forces Shape Entrepreneurial Opportunity. I blame my mother. She always said that to everybody, and she's passed it down to me. Changing names. Dietrich Muhammad, of course, Senior Organizing and Research Associate for the Program on Inequality and the Common Good at the Institute for Policy Studies. And Chris Rapp will be speaking downstairs tonight here in Baltimore, Maryland, in this building on Morgan State University's campus at 7:30 in the communications building. 410-319-8888. Join us here. The question of positivity, because we hear it preached to us all the time. Is it real? And part of what Chris Rapp is saying, it's not. 410-319-8888. So when you look at, because you're not saying this is just about whiteness and maleness.
No, it's not. I mean, again, let's go back to my good friend Donald Trump. I love him dearly. Here's
You'd
a
love
guy,
to use him as an example anyway.
Yeah, just yeah, exactly. What would I do without the Donald? He had everything going for him. Well, except maybe brains. I don't know how smart he is, but he knows how to hustle, right? But he filed bankruptcy at least twice. He couldn't get it right. He had everything, everything you could imagine.
Yep.
Best schools, family money, access to early entrepreneurship through his family. All of those things, and he couldn't pull it off immaculately. So I guess the bottom line is, the starting point is, entrepreneurship, full-time, scalable, is really hard. When people go to speak to high school students or elementary school students and they say, you know, you can do it, they don't just say, you guys should go to the Ivy League without knowing who's in the room and their GPA and what they're interested in. But we say, start a business. But the reality is, it's easier to get into an Ivy League college than start a business that lasts 4 years, generates $25,000 or more a year, and employs at least one person. That's 12%. Compare that to...
What do you mean 12% of what?
12% of businesses that survive 4 years, that grow to over 25,000 and employ one person. That's only 12% based on a recent Kauffman's Foundation study.
When you look at invisible capital and the power behind wealth that builds more wealth in America, which is really what we're talking about here in many ways.
Right.
And we're saying that the positivity gospel that is being preached to a lot of our young people in America has limitations. Then what do you say to young people instead?
You know, perseverance, right? I mean, people love to confuse me for an optimist. They do. God bless them. But I'm not. I believe in myself. I don't believe that the universe conspires to make me successful, however people assume that I am successful. That could very well be. That's not where I draw the strength. I draw strength from the values I was taught, the skills that I acquired over time, the examples I've seen in my family and beyond, reading, learning, experiencing, and putting those together and never saying I'm not able to do something, even though it could be very hard. It's the difference between perseverance and optimism is a worthwhile distinction to make, okay? Because I don't believe that I'm necessarily due all the riches in the world, no matter how smart or gifted or anything I feel I am at any point in time. I just know that if I'm going to try to follow that path towards conventional wealth or success, there's certain things I need to do, and I'm not going to take no for an answer.
Well, there are a couple things I want to talk about. How do we get to the place where we think we should be in this conversation? How do we be realistic about where we are? But let's go to the phones first. 410-319-8888. Chris Rapp is here. His book is Invisible Capital, How Unseen Forces Shape Entrepreneurial Authority, brought to us by Dietrich Muhammad, who is hosting him here tonight at Morgan State University. Listening to us here on WEAA 88.9 FM in Baltimore and broadcasting live throughout the country and world on Free Speech TV and streamed on steinershow.org. And Tommy in California, you're on the air.
Hello?
Hi, Tommy, you're on the air. Welcome.
Yeah, you're talking about, you know, working. And anyway, I did some time in college, got my construction technology degrees, started a company in construction. I had a very good reputation, but by the time I got 4 employees, I had to get comp insurance. I had, you know, carry unemployment and all that. By the time I got my 5th employee, I couldn't afford it anymore. I you know, just the cost was overwhelming. So I had to dump all my employees and just go back to work for myself. I spent 30 years in the industry. I ended up disabled, wore my body out, and virtually have no retirement, nothing. You know, I mean, just seems like I spent all this time working so hard and had a great reputation in this town. I still do. And it got me nowhere, it seems like.
and so are you still working or are you now not working?
Excuse me?
Are you still working or are you stopped?
I'm disabled. My left knee went out. My left knee got destroyed and was replaced with a titanium knee.
Right.
And it was a bad surgery, so it left me incapacitated. I can't walk very far. I can't go on roofs. Can't climb ladders. You know, and I can't even get disability because they don't acknowledge that it's that bad.
you know, tell me, the story you're telling, and Chris, rather, the story Tommy's talking about to us, is every day in America.
Absolutely.
How many people we know that go out and strike it out on their own and do this kind of stuff that Tommy's talking about doing and end up where they end up? Not because they're not working hard, not because they're not trying to make a business work, not because they're not trying to take care of employees and families, but because of that.
Oh, absolutely. We talk about the social welfare net, but where's that net? Where's the bailout? Where's the support for entrepreneurs who want to create enterprises that have real value that are not about Enron or Halliburton or anything? But you're talking about construction, right? You're talking about something we all need, we all value. There's no substitute for good quality construction. There's just not. And there are people who have great skills and experiences and networks who do not have a whole lot of formal education, but they are at the top of their game. But they may not have access to the financial capital. They may not know who the right people are. They may not have the political connections. Who's to say that if Tommy had the exact same profile, but he had a political connections, that even in his situation being disabled, that he could still manage a company based on accessing different hidden assets that perhaps he doesn't have or wasn't able to leverage in time? We're talking about a wide range of skills and access that a lot of people don't think about when they're in business. Tommy knows how to do construction. He has a great reputation. He's been doing it for 30 years, and that's still not enough.
So let's talk about, for Tommy and everybody else, before we go to our next caller, Sonia, hold on. We're going to come to your call. What is enough? And what is it we have to do as a society? What is the infrastructure that has to be in place? So not to support people on welfare, not to pay your bills, but what has to be in place so that Tommy's and everybody else in the world can actually do the work they do, they love, make a living, take care of families, right, and live a decent life?
Well, you know, if we can support AIG failing miserably, we can support Tommy.
Amen to that.
Because you can look at Tommy's track record in 30 years and say, I've built X number of homes. I've built X number of offices or playgrounds or what have you. That's real value in real local communities. Tommy deserves a chance to fail and start anew because the value he creates, he's creating community assets. Now, Tommy, I know I don't know you, and I'm just saying that there are certain people in certain sectors that create real value. In my book, I call it Commonwealth Enterprises.
Exactly.
And those are for-profit or nonprofit entities who, in the operation of their organization, are creating community assets. A perfect example of another type of Commonwealth enterprise is independent media, which you know something about.
Well, our company, Center for Emerging Media, we have 4 employees. We produce this and whatever else we can produce. We work hard to keep it afloat.
But see, the benefit of your show and this organization is not just the people who are listening right now. It's not just the 4 people you employ. It's the discussions. It's the stories that resonate after the show is over.
Right.
Because it's a independent and free media that represents the broad diversity of ideology in this country, helps our democracy, helps our society. That whether people have ever heard your show or not, it helps them and they don't even know it. And there are daycares, another example of a Commonwealth enterprise. The more quality daycare we have, the better country we're going to be, the better the next generation is going to be. We need to invest in skilled, well-prepared entrepreneurs, and many of them, most of them, will conventionally fail in their first enterprise, maybe even their second. But there are people who have everything pretty much they need on paper, but because they've been blown out by their first enterprise, perhaps like Tommy, they can never do it again.
Because their daddy's not Donald Trump's daddy.
Yeah.
Tommy, thanks for joining us, man. Really good luck. My heart's with you, and you know, I know in California they're laying off teachers. There was a time when this could happen and you could go to a vocational school and actually teach the trades you know and continue to survive, which I know a lot of guys did who were in construction for years, and they end up teaching here locally at a place like Mergenthal Vocational Technical High School and Carver and other vocational schools. There was a way to do that. So good luck, bro. I mean, just good luck. I hope that everything works out. 410-319-8888. Sonia, you're on the air.
Hello, everyone.
Hi, Sonia. Welcome.
Thank you. I have this feeling that I've harbored for quite a long time about really successful people. I think when you hear their story, there's always a tidbit that's left out that you'll never hear about or read about. Call it luck. I call it the untold story. Mm-hmm. There's always going to be one detail that you will never know about, and some of it is luck. But I think those people who go from success to mega success, and I'm talking about Trump, Oprah, Buffett, Gates, the list goes on. I think there's always going to be a tidbit left out that you'll never hear about. And I'll take my answer off the air.
What would that tidbit be? Tidbit would be Chris Rabb.
Well, you know, subtly, I think it would be invisible capital in one form or another. And the sister mentioned Warren Buffett. Now, here's a ridiculously, fabulously wealthy man who acknowledged his privilege, who acknowledged his invisible capital. He made the invisible visible. Why? Because at the end of the day, he's going to die rich. His great-grandchildren are going to die rich. Exactly. He doesn't care what other people think, so he's doing the right thing. And Warren Buffett said, if I were a woman, I wouldn't be here. I wouldn't. That's what he said. He didn't have to say that. Donald Trump could have said that, but he didn't have
Trump
the...
Trump would never say that. He's too busy being on television trying to be...
he didn't have the backbone or the...
tough boy.
Right. But Warren Buffett said, if it was not for the accident of me being born a boy, I would not be in this position today based on how society was constructed when I was coming up. And that's very real. Now, that doesn't mean to say that, like you referred earlier, that it's about whiteness and maleness, but those things matter. But in the top five predictors of business success... race, gender, and class are not explicitly mentioned. They include formal education, choice of industry. They include relevant work experience in the same industry that you're starting your business, experience in a family-owned business, not necessarily your family, but any family. These things are the most are the biggest predictors for business success. So the upside is if you figure out how to have a mix of those things in ways that you wouldn't otherwise do so, you're going to increase your chances.
Now, there's a lot of people, and you talk a bit about this, that they kind of blame, let's say, other communities for doing well.
Right.
Like, they have a leg up. Korean Americans have a leg up on the rest of the communities
of color.
Yeah, we
hear that a lot, yeah.
You know, or Indian Americans have a leg up.
Right.
I don't mean Native people. I'm talking about East Indian Americans
right.
have a leg up on.
Right. Well, I mean... The problem with talking about these issues based exclusively on race or ethnicity or nationalities, you're comparing an Indian American with a PhD in physics with a black man with a GED. Why are we doing that? That we don't do that. We don't compare a baseball player to a football player or, you know, Little League to the pros. We don't do that. And Korean Americans, you know, they are overrepresented in urban businesses, but I wouldn't want that life. If we're talking about the American dream, that's not American dream I want. Those businesses are small scale. They're not scalable. They don't create the type of wealth that a lot of people think they do. They're working all the time. I have two small children. I like to spend some time with my kids, get right. to know them. Unless they're working in my business, I'm not going to have that opportunity because they're working around the clock. And you can say, well, that's the Puritan work ethic, you know, Korean style. But that's in and of itself is not necessarily good or something that we should replicate.
So let's talk about, before we take a break here, let's talk about the political reality from your perspective. What creates a world that we're never going to have a completely level playing field in this
right.
world, but what creates, what are the societal programs, what is what government can do? What's the infrastructure that has to be built and put in place so that people do have a more equal shot at making it? We're not just talking about stand up and be positive and you can do it.
Right. Well, I have a whole chapter called Democratizing
right.
Entrepreneurial Opportunity.
Right.
We love democracy. We love entrepreneurship, or at least we love talking about those things. It's kind of like a Reese's peanut butter cup. Let's just push those things together and come up with something real tasty. My goodness, that's crazy. Democracy and entrepreneurship, that's communist. No, but really, like, think about it. Just let's assume you're a raving conservative, all right?
We can assume that. Okay, assume that for a minute. See what happens.
Okay, sure. In this parallel universe, and your head won't explode.
Right.
You're saying we need more hardworking people to embrace capitalism and get off the government dole and, you know, do, you know, get into free enterprise and all of these kind of fictitious notions. But the reality is, if you level the playing field for entrepreneurship and you prepare people, that means that a greater percentage of each community in this country will have a greater chance of creating the type of wealth, personal and communal wealth, that can create more opportunities than are presently created by private enterprise, corporations, and government, and NGOs, nonprofits. If we actually empower communities to create the next generation of entrepreneurs in ways that sustain communities versus prey on them. So I don't believe that entrepreneurship is inherently good. I am addicted to entrepreneurship. But again, right, when I talk about my enslaved ancestors, they were some very entrepreneurial slave traders. They were European, they were African, and they said, here's a great business model of transporting human chattel from one place to another. They were entrepreneurs. I frown on that. That's not a type of entrepreneur I'm particularly in love with. And then you have more progressive entrepreneurs that I think help communities. And that's what I'm really trying to talk about here, is that we need to consider more the development of communal wealth. Because at the end of the day, if you live in a house and it's not in foreclosure, but both neighbors, their house is underwater in foreclosure,
right,
that impacts you. So you have an investment in your community, if only for selfish short-term reasons. But the upside is, if you invest in your community, that's a good long-term investment too. So how do you create incentives that allow early partnerships with individuals to create businesses that otherwise wouldn't have as great a chance without those early partnerships?
Charles Rabb, I hope we can. Chris Rabb, I did it to you again, Denver. I'm sorry.
Just as long as you get my book title right. That's
Invisible Capital, How Unseen Forces Shape Entrepreneurial Opportunity. Chris Rabb. It's an incredible book, and I read huge chunks of it over the weekend. I got it on Friday, and it's just, and then we want to have him back here for a longer conversation about all this. It was brought to us, of course, by Dietrich Mohammed, senior organizer of the Institute for Policy Studies. He was often a guest on the show, and he is sponsoring, hosting Chris Rabb tonight here in the Communications Building here in Baltimore at Morgan State University. Come on over, room 101 downstairs from this radio station. And I am Mark Steiner on WEAA 80.9 FM and Free Speech TV. Chris Rabb has been our guest. The book, Invisible Capital, How Unseen Forces Shape Entrepreneurial Opportunity. When we come back from this break, we'll be joined by Ralph Nader to talk about his take on where the economy is, what the government should and shouldn't be doing, and why he's coming to Baltimore to speak once again. So all that's coming up. On the way there, I want to remind you, the Mark Steiner Show is made possible by the Maryland University of Maryland Parkinson's Disease and Movement Disorder Center, providing clinical research trials that evaluate new therapies and the latest treatment options, including surgical intervention for advanced stages of disease. The number for more information is 1-800-492-5538. Stay with us. We'll be right back.